Welcome to News from the Breach, a Dragon Prince podcast. We are your hosts, Kaylee.
Yana.
And we have a special guest today.
Jan.
Hey!
Welcome. Welcome.
Hey, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. We're sitting around drinking cups of tea. We're going to chat to Jan for a bit, and then we'll get on with talking about the finale of season 5 later. Okay. So Jan is a really good friend of ours, and we asked him to do a cover of The Dark-Eyed Sailor, which was in our last podcast episode. And I'm really excited that we did it. We did the recording just now. And I love it. And we'll play it after we've had this chat, I think.
Yeah.
And can you tell us a little bit about the process of doing the cover?
It was really interesting because in the TV show there's just a 30-second part of it, and it's just a chorus. And you, Kaylee, sent me some lyrics that are like a whole song with verses and everything. So I thought, okay, there must be a version online, and there wasn't. So I tried to make something up that's like whole song material, and I used the chorus from the TV show, obviously, because it was already there and I liked it.
Also, yeah.
I didn't know what you thought of it.
Yeah.
And it was interesting because it's kind of in a shanty setting.
Like pirate songs?
Pirate songs, yeah. Maybe people who like travel the world on ships and stuff.
Yeah, so, like a sailor's...
Yeah.
Maybe to get over their boredom sometimes. Or, you know, if you shrub something on the deck or something, you want to do something else while...
Yeah, also when they, like, land, they go into the pub and they have a sing-along. And there's a big folk tradition in many countries of this, and it's mostly polyphonic, so more people singing together, and I think mostly without instruments.
Okay.
It's just voices.
Mm-hmm.
And I also like listening to it. It's really nice. It's like a really nice genre.
Yeah.
If you like to listen into it.
Mm.
But I was thinking about how would I do this alone. So at first I was like, I have to make things right by the shanty genre. And this didn't work. So I thought, okay, I'm doing like kind of a folk song with shanty aspects. So I dropped the accordion and got the mandola because it's folkier, I don't know. And you can, like, the melody sounds really good, I think. And then I developed, and it came like without me doing anything. It just came to me, this would sound nice. And then I sang it, and then it all made sense, kind of. And I am really excited about the song now. Yeah, I like it. I like what has become of it, and that it's like the version, the full version that is out there now. Because I don't know any other.
Yeah, totally.
Really cool. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. That's lovely to hear how you put it all together.
Hmm.
And this like shanty thing, it has a communal aspect. And also kind of a culture. There's a culture associated with it. And that's really cool.
Yeah,
nice. Okay, so now we've talked so much about it. I hope you're excited to hear it. Here is Jan's version of The Dark-Eyed Sailor.
Sailor, ships adrift and the seas his jailer. Drag him down, drown, 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 down in the wicked depths below. lost at sea, the sailor cried, I will not drown and I will not die. The ocean's rule I dare defy, the sea shall bow to me, the sea shall bow to me. Woe to the man, the dark-eyed sailor, ships adrift and the sea's his jailer. Drag him down, drown, 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 down in the wicked depths below. The fog pressed in, the ice did freeze, the sails called nary a whispered breeze. But to his pride the sailor seized, the sea shall bow to me.
Yeah, I love your version. I find it really, really nice. And I also was, I spent a while looking online to try and find the full version as well, and it doesn't exist. They did the short version in the chapter where they're just singing and there's no music to it at all. And that's kind of what you were saying with the, it was multiple voices and that it was like focusing on different people. People on the ship singing it at different times and stuff, so you got to hear those specific voices, and it must have been a very different experience than sitting in your in your room and putting it together by yourself.
Very cool.
I'm hoping that they are releasing a full version sometime. I don't know, or maybe other people, other fans will do something with the lyrics. I would guess so. It's the internet.
Probably. Yeah. Or maybe you inspire some people to do their own versions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
It's the lyrics are also very interesting, because at first I thought, well, okay, it's about this man who's who says, the sea shall bow to me, and was really...
like a bit arrogant?
Yeah, arrogant.
Yeah.
And then... after singing it for a few times, I noticed that this is a tale of an arrogant man whose arrogance is so important that even while he drowns, he's not letting it go. And this I found interesting. Also, you told me a woman writer wrote the lyrics.
Yeah, I think her pronouns are she. Pretty sure. Devon Jill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not a cis male person who wrote his lyrics.
Yes.
It's a bit interesting because this there's a symbolic layer that comes from psychoanalysis, that men are afraid of uniting with water because they are... boundaries get soaked up, And it's, they say that this is like the female aspects of men that they fear.
Interesting.
And this lyrics, it would be weird if the person who wrote this didn't know about this theory.
Okay.
So the there's a lot in this about a man like wanting to stay a man. And if you think about the episode,
mm-hmm.
he dies doing this.
Yeah.
So I think it's really on point for the time we're living in.
Yeah.
And this is something I did not know when you sent me this the first time. And I'm really happy to be able to decipher it in this way. Even though it's just my own interpretation now, but it would really be weird to me if this wasn't behind it.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's really... Thank you so much. Yeah. Like, wow. So deep, man.
Yeah. I thought of Finnegan.
Finnegan, so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's Finnegan's song, isn't it?
Yeah. But he didn't drown.
Well, he kind of did. I mean, he got eaten, yeah. But probably drowned.
In the stomach.
Yeah.
Or maybe. Yeah.
No, that's great. I would really like to interview Devon Jill and see what she has to say about that, actually. That would be amazing.
Yeah, you can ask her. Maybe she...
Yeah, I might send her a message and see if she responds. I mean, she seems to be a very busy person. But but I think they did interview her on Hot Brown Morning Potion. So I think she might be open to doing a short interview. Let's see.
Yeah,
that would be amazing.
Yeah.
It also shows how they are really, they love these details.
Yeah,
and of course.
It's really good composing, composed together, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much love in the writing of the show and, yeah, in the lyrics. And
also in the voice acting, everything.
Yeah.
Like, so good.
Yeah.
We're fans.
That's obviously why we're doing a podcast. Yeah, great. No, I love it. I'm even more excited about the song now. I've heard more about your journey
with I wanted to surprise you with this.
No, it's really nice. That's great. And yeah, the episode that it comes from as well is we talked about it already in the last podcast, but the name of it is Finnegan's Wake, and a wake is also in English the kind of saying goodbye to party to a person, so it's so fitting that it's like that's Finnegan's last chapter kind of and the song and everything.
Also, Finnegan's Wake refers to this folk song Finnegan's Wake, which has also a shanty tradition, I think.
Yeah, I read something about that. Do you, have you heard the shanty? Or?
Years ago. Hmm. I can't, like... I don't have it right now.
Okay. That's interesting.
That's really cool. Layers on layers of things. Yeah, very cool. And The Dark-Eyed Sailor, which is the title of the song, there's also other songs with that title as well. Mm. So...
So we also had a watch about the last episode of this book, and I have my ideas what's going to happen, and maybe also Kelly does. But what do you think, Jan, about the last episode and also the last seasons, maybe?
Mm.
So first episode.
Last episode, yeah, they did a really good job in creating suspense in like every aspect of the story, which is kind of annoying for me.
So many cliffhangers, you mean?
Yeah, like five at once.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know how much is yet to come. This is also, if I knew there would be one season left, it would be different. You know it?
Yeah, there's two more seasons.
Ah, okay.
And that it's kind of, that's supposed to be the end. Like, it was meant to be seven seasons from the beginning. Okay.
I like it when they do that because then they can plan ahead and I think they're doing a better job than when it's just one after another and another. Yeah, and I think that's a good good amount of episodes coming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's gonna happen. I think...
No pressure.
Yeah. I mean, what are they gonna do with this prison? So they have the prison now and they have to keep it safe from everybody that's gonna go get it. Yeah. And they are still like at the Sea of the Cast Out or what's it called? So there's a lot of potential for things to happen right after this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't think they're gonna like have a big recess.
No, I don't think so either. Let's go and party with the pill. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I can say about it. I think it's gonna be loads of things happening.
Loads of interesting stuff. Yeah.
And I'm asking myself if Viren is gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Would be a bit weird. A bit boring.
No.
But how, yeah, maybe they managed to come up with something.
Without killing the homunculus.
Or with killing the homunculus.
Or with killing the homunculus.
Yeah. Or getting another child. Somewhere.
Just another one. It has to be his child, huh? Well, we find, yeah. Let's not go too deep into this. We can talk about this later in the in the podcast. But yeah, there's options there.
Okay, cool. And what do you think about the whole series in general?
So I've watched it again from season one to now, like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good to get a grasp of everything, every story arc together, because when I haven't seen it for half a year, I remember so little of it. I don't know how it's with you.
Totally the same.
Yeah. I liked that they made like a change after three, four?
Yeah, I think three.
Yeah.
So people are older now and the stories are a bit different and it made sense at the time, I think. And I really liked how they transformed the story from this, like, Catullus kingdom stuff to what's behind this whole thing with Aroros. And
yeah.
I also like this story with the Sun Kingdom. Is it called the Sun Kingdom? I don't know.
The Sunfire Elves, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how it developed over time. I'm really excited about what's happening next there. Mm-hmm.
With the Sunseed.
Yeah, because there's... Mm-hmm. there will be conflict.
Of course. Betrayal. Miana.
Miana.
Damn it.
We don't like her.
Pull it together.
No, I was so wrong.
Ah.
I was so wrong in the last chapter. We talk about this later, but yeah, I was totally wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big shame.
Yeah.
I thought she was smarter than that.
I thought she was good.
Smarter than that, yeah.
That didn't. Okay. Back to you.
Yeah, that's about it. I mean, I like how they deliberately making everything more diverse. You can criticize that it wasn't like that in the beginning, but I think they're doing it really well. Now, and in a way that's not annoying.
Mm.
It's more like, okay, people are different. So this is a word with people that are different.
Yeah.
That's kind of realistic. So I like that.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
I've seen that in lots of TV shows now, and this is one of them. I think there's going to be even more.
Yeah.
And it's calming me down a bit to see it so much, because I think this is what people will watch when they grow up.
Yeah.
And it's really important.
Yeah, more representation for more different kinds of families and different kinds of, like, different races and
everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just visibility for some of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you also watch the Avatar?
Yeah.
What do you think about both series? Like the original Avatar, not Korra?
I mean, The Last Airbender was, it's a bit old by now. So you see that it's like they want to do it well also, but it's another time. Mm-hmm. And when I watched it with my kid, I was sometimes embarrassed by things happening there, like how they pictured love and heterosexuality all the time and this kind of stuff, and how they talk to each other sometimes. And I think that's, there's words between this now, but I still would say in that time Avatar was also bold and progressive.
Yeah.
And in Korra they're doing it even more. Yeah,
yeah.
So yeah, it's the thing of the times, and you never know who decided about all this now. And
yeah, there are, for example, if you compare Avatar, the original series, with now the live action series, there's also some changes in relationships.
I would guess so. Yeah.
So yeah, it's not fixed, you know. Mm.
Like that they've pulled it back into Avatar.
Mm.
To make it better and more interesting.
And some parts were not maybe in the show, but if you look at the wiki and the people who wrote it, then for example you see also Kiyoshi was not straight.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like this.
Mm, yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, in the comics and
yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. In the things around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And interesting with Korra, we get the outing at the end of Korra, you know? Like and it's not spoken. You see it, and you either see it or you don't, I think.
Yeah.
But in The Dragon Prince, it's also like that. It's not really talked about, but you do have queer couples, like Queen Anya's moms, you know, and Runan and Ithari, the elves and stuff. It's more, it just exists in the world, and it's not like a vague thing that's kind of thrown in at the end, like.
Yeah. Exactly, but this mirrors, like, it's in the real world, because when Avatar came out, it was still about coming out, and it was more a bigger thing,
even,
and it's a good sign that now it may be just depicted, and it's just there.
Yeah, it's more realistic, and, it is there, whether, people think about it or not.
Yeah.
Cool, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jan. That's amazing. And we loved the song. And I think now you get your well-deserved round of applause.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome back to News from the Breach. This is the actual podcast now about Chapter 9 of Book 5, Ocean, Infantis Sanguine. Really enjoyed the song and the interview with Jan. This time, Jana's going to read a short synopsis, and then we'll get into what happened in this wonderful chapter.
While Subeya fights for her life and Vern arrives at a crossroads, the race toward Erroros' prison leads those who seek him deep beneath the waves. Dum dum dum. Dum, dum, dum.
Just to note, we may have cat noises in the background. The cat, our cat Jill has decided to join us this evening.
Hello, Jill.
All right, so let's get into it. The first being we see is Zubeya. So shall we talk about Zubeya first?
Yeah, because I also feel bad about it, because I completely forgot about her.
Oh, poor Zubea. Yeah. Poor Zombea. Yeah.
And then, yeah, when I saw her in the episode, then I was like, oh, damn it.
Oh, yeah, there was something about you. Yeah, yeah, we didn't see Zubea much in the last couple of chapters.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you're forgiven.
Yeah. She's also lost her mind and has a fever dream like Viren visits, in quotes, Avasandum. And she says something about her wound is a scratch, a mere nothing. Which reminds me of Monty Python.
Yeah.
This is but a scratch.
Yeah.
Great. And yeah, she's, yeah, like, wants to give in and just doesn't want to fight it anymore. But Avasandum convinces her to be strong for him and Sim.
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, poor Zubea. Yeah. She's completely...
corrupted.
Corrupted, exhausted, infected, and just totally wants to give up and be with Avasandum again.
Which is understandable, but yeah.
But she has a young dragonling to take care of.
Exactly.
So. And one thing I liked about this was that Avasandum says you need to fight for strength and life. And this thing, when he says life, it just takes me back to the chapter where they kill Avasandum.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that this is a day of life, you know, when Zubea had laid the egg.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it was nice that it kind of echoed that chapter again.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and she has to fight for her life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she wakes up in the storm spire.
Mm-hmm.
And then she drags herself up. Like, she's obviously feeling really poorly. Like, I can relate, Zubea. I've been so poorly this winter. Not quite as poorly as you, like, not zombie style.
And not corrupted.
Not corrupted, hopefully. But yeah, she drags herself out and she's trying to be strong, and then it just gets her.
Yeah.
And
she crashes into a forest.
Yeah. Poor Zubea.
Yeah.
Okay, so this episode, actually, we're going to go a little bit more chronologically. Yeah. So we'll come back to Zubea at the end of the episode, at the end of the chapter when it actually happens this time. And we'll move now to the Sea of the Castout, where we find our heroes rowing out from the sea lakes. And Ez tells them he knows the secret of the nature of the prison, which I think I was hinting at in the last episode, that was probably the case. Yeah. I couldn't remember. Yeah. It's been so long since I saw this. But I was like, I said something about Domina Profundis. Yeah, she must have told Ezrin the secret. Like,
but we didn't see it.
But we didn't see it happen.
Yeah.
That's right.
And also going back to the... cast outs, like the statues, and I said something about they're both cast outs, but it looks like it's only one, the one kneeling down.
Yeah.
And
like the other one looks kind of like they're punishing them.
When we see them on the boat, there are also seagulls above them, or like where they are, so above the prison. Do the seagulls maybe know the location already also? Or do they hear Ezrin speaking about what Domina Profundis said?
Maybe Ezrin's asking them. But I don't know, when you see that they've jumped in the water, there's also that big shoal of fish. Maybe the seagulls are also just interested.
Just hungry.
In the fish.
Okay.
Maybe. Not sure. Didn't notice that though.
Oh.
Very observant.
Oh. Okay. And also, normally, Claudia is always one step ahead, but this time, it's Ezrin. So, that's cool.
True. Yes. Thank you, Ezrin, for keeping that to yourself so that you could surprise the team with it now. Really good. But that was the whole point with the whole, like, compartmentalizing the knowledge about the prison. So it was good that Ez actually didn't tell anyone.
Oh, true.
So it couldn't get tortured out of anyone. Okay, and then it moves on to the anti-heroes, and they're looking for a brown island. Where's the brown island? It's day 30. But Terry realizes then, oh dear. And what does he call it?
It's Goong.
Goong. Dragon tooth. Goong.
I had to look it up because I thought it's an actual word, but nope, it's not a word. And it's actually a leftover of the brown sludge tart.
Ah, true, because he tried it.
Yeah.
Ah, it's a bit of brown sludge tart. Yeah. Nice.
And then I was also wondering, why does Terry smell on it?
Would you smell it? I'm not sure. Maybe I would too, just out of curiosity.
But it was already for several days on this flubber thing.
Yeah.
So, not sure.
Bleah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not nice. Then they figure out the prison must be under the water.
No.
And Claudia is like, oh, well, I need a purple pentapus.
No.
Because, of course,
dark magic.
Knows a dark magic spell that can get her to be able to breathe underwater.
No.
And here's a Easter egg for you. The purple pentapus also appears in Avatar The Last Airbender. It's also called a pentapus, a purple pentapus. And it's from Return to Omashu. And it's an episode where they're all kind of stuck in Omashu and they come up with this pentapox, which is a made-up disease. Mm. And they use the pentapuses and stick them on their faces so that they all have these pox.
Oh my god, yes. Oh my god. And I just watched it like 2 weeks ago. Oh my god.
Yeah, and I just rewatched the whole thing.
Oh my god. Okay,
There we go.
Totally.
So, yeah.
Very interesting.
Pentapox. Yeah. And it shows up in the credits, so there's a comparison. They don't look the same, but they do carry the same name.
I wrote down it's the child, but yes, of course.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Avatar, love it.
Love it, love the references. Yeah. Thank you very much. Okay, anything more to say about that? I think that was it, huh? It was very short. We go back.
Just maybe the day 30 is the expiration date of Viren.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I came up with.
Yeah. He only has 30 days, and it's the last day, which will be talked about more during the chapter. So we can go back to the heroes. They realize that they need to dive as well. And how are they going to do that? Callum has the amulet from Akiyu, which Akiyu was annoyed that Callum asked about because he will just figure it out.
Yeah.
He looks in his notebook and the spell is written there in the notebook.
Yeah.
And it has the runes and everything. And it's cute. Stella looks into the notebook and then gets a nice like cheek scratch.
Yeah. Nice color.
From Callum. Then Callum paints the runes on himself, Rayla and Ezrin's necks, where the gills should grow. And Jellybug walks through the ink beforehand as well, which is quite cute.
Yeah.
And then they have to jump in the water to test the gills and figure out how it works.
There's a question for you. Where did they get the ink from?
Ooh. I'm just going to go with, because Callum has his notebook around, that he always has some like colours and stuff to mix for painting.
Nah, good.
That's what I'm going to say. It can't be the pentapox ink. It's way too lightly coloured. I don't know. Good question. We don't see that how that happens.
Or maybe they rode back to the sea legs and got ink from there.
Yeah.
And then rode back.
Maybe. You know? Yeah. a longer process that we didn't get to see. But good question. It wasn't shown.
Yeah. And something about the amulet or the spell. It's Aquis Spirare Faucibus. Breathe through the throat. And it can be used on multiple people and has to be drawn physically instead of only in midair. So it's a little bit different, like air magic. And it's similar to the spell of the mage rings, to get mage rings. But now it's mage guilds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
And yeah, when they test it out, I would be like Rayla.
Yeah. Yeah, just breathe in the water.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Super creepy.
No.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
So I would also be on dragon sitting duty and bait sitting duty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy. Okay. So yeah, Rayla ends up sitting out on the boat and dragon sits with Sorin. Dragon and bait sits. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, bait.
And baitlings.
And baitlings. So back to the anti-heroes, the purple pentapus gets just discarded on the ground, and Claudia drips 3 drips of blood into the shell that she's mixing it in.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry is concerned. She's mixing pentapus ink with her own blood. And she says something like, "It's a spell, Terry, not a pudding recipe."
Mm.
But... yeah.
No.
Mm. Tension.
Yeah.
But Terry's very proud. Gives her a hug.
Yeah. And lets her go off into the water.
And what's the spell?
It's Idop im si Idop Rio Knis I Selek the Efif Sude. With 5 tentacles, I think, your body is my body.
There we go.
Long one and, yeah, pretty dark.
Yes. And she gets purple eyes and then Viren kind of...
And also cool, like, octopus...
Like, patterns.
Patterns on her face and arms, I think.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah. No, it's a very cool visual.
Yeah.
And then Viren sees a big tidal wave and then jumps up in real life. And says, no, my baby girl. And he's then awake, which is surprising. And Claudia just creepily, gets sucked underwater. Yeah. Very, very, very creepy indeed. Very decisive.
Viren sees it and remembers the fever dream he had some episodes ago. And when he also saw Claudia... in the water getting washed away by a big wave.
Yeah, yeah.
And also Sorin running around in the castle. I can't remember. And then...
when he was looking for him and then he ended up disintegrating into like ash or something.
Something horrible.
Yeah. That was the whole Twin Peaks...
Exactly.
Blah, blah.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Viren's awake for his last day, I mean, or last few hours. Back to heroes, Callum and Ez are in the water, and then Callum gives him, like, zoomy whirlpool foot rockets. I don't know.
I was also wondering what spell he used or which rune he threw, because we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because Ezran befriends a group of fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then to follow them more quickly, that's why the rune comes in.
Yeah.
So I watched the episode 3 times and I didn't catch it. That they followed a group of fish and... they are leading them to the prison, actually.
Oh, yeah. True. That makes sense. Yeah. I also hadn't really realized that. Yeah, and I would say we didn't see kind of the rune he did because he's just being, like, he's getting more and more awesome. So I think as the show goes on, we're probably going to see less of the actual technical how he does it, because we can just assume that he's awesome and just does his magic.
I think we saw the rune.
Yeah.
But I don't know what rune it is. Or is it ocean magic or is it air magic?
Yeah.
Because it's also kind of looking like air magic.
Mm-hmm.
Or air bending, you know?
Yeah.
Or okay. Water bending. Yeah.
Jilly, can you settle down?
You're too loud.
Do you want to say hello? Back to the anti-heroes. Viren sees Aravos appearing from Sparklepuff's body.
Yeah.
And Aravos starts talking to Viren and says it's a special day and that they're so close and on the cusp of each other's realities. Have to say again, love the voice. I've forgotten the actor, but yeah, it's nice to hear Aravos's voice again.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
You see, I remember Aravos and you remember Zubeya, so
yeah,
I think we're quit.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
It's also interesting how they, you know, swap places, like Sir Sparklepuff transformed into Aravos' astral form. And then Aravos takes or borrows Viren's consciousness inside the prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sparklepuff just switches places back and forth. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Because they are so close to each other or what?
Yeah, it seems like.
Oh.
And Sparklepuff is just accepting of all the different situations.
Yes.
Doesn't question it.
No.
It's like, Also, when Viren has a knife to his neck, then it's just like,
Not afraid at all.
Not afraid. Just, yeah, very trusting.
Now we are in the prison.
We're in the prison and Aravos is sensing Claudia and others approaching.
And said something about that Claudia is more powerful than Ezran and Callum. And it's great that Rowan could get here in time for his life expiration date. And he finds a book in his library with an old spell to make the resurrection permanent. With the blood of a child.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
The blood of his child?
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
So there has to be a sacrifice. And then there's a confusion about which child, because not Soren and not Claudia.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, your other child. Our child.
Yeah.
Our baby was so cute. With Aravos' lovely eyes, and the voice must be from Rowan's family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then we have Sparklepuff again, because this is the child of them, and apparently knew it from the beginning, because you remember maybe the screeches, blood of child. And is not afraid at all of getting a knife to its throat.
But Viren finds himself on a crossroads because of the dark path that he's taken, and he's feeling really bad about leading Claudia down that dark path.
And well. Also regrets choosing the dark path on its own, on his own.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah, and clearly doesn't want to kill the homunculus. But I'm not sure if it's because he's, like, attached to Sparklepuff. Like, maybe he's a little bit attached to Sparklepuff, but also just because he doesn't want to do any more dark magic.
And I think
he made that very clear.
Yeah, I think the letter, because he also said no more dark magic, never again.
Mm-hmm.
He's done with it and with Aravos.
Mm-hmm.
And now when he kills Sir Sparklepuff, it just never ends.
Yeah, he's back in the cycle and going down the path, the never-ending dark path.
Yeah. And we don't know what could happen with Aravos then, you know. Maybe because he's so good with manipulating people, there is something special in Sir Sparklepuff. And then Viren has it. And with the human form, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just throwing ideas around, but yeah.
Yeah, and he also says that he's going to show him how to use every little bit of his essence, which is also, it's very dark, like, not just to save his life, but also for his future. So he obviously has other plans as well for the parts, like you were getting at. One link to the essence is also, like, from the Dark Crystal. It reminds me of that totally, because they suck out the essence of the other creatures for, like, the Skeksis. It's a total thing. It's like, your essence. Yeah, it's very, 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 very creepy and dark. So anything that says, like, the essence of a being, is, oh, yeah, totally reminds me of that.
Yeah, sounds like it. Wow.
So to go back to what's going on under the water, Claudia's talking to Ezyn Callum, and now she's full pentapus, like with the... It's the first time you see her with all the tentacles and everything.
Five.
She had five, because penta means five.
Oh, also true. Nice, yes.
Yeah, that Callum's got his judgy face on. It's me, you know me, I'm still the same person, and, like, plays with her hair, which is now half white because of all the dark magic. Wouldn't you do the same thing to bring back Harrow? And then I found it really interesting while she's doing this. She's like, she goes to Callum and she's like on one of his shoulders, and then goes to Ezrin and is on the other shoulder, like, wouldn't you do that for your dad, you know? And that completely reminds me of the trope of having this, like, good angel and an evil angel on your shoulder. Because she's totally doing that, like, just being very manipulative and with this shoulder move. And I also sent you the link, because I looked it up to see how old that is. And apparently that's that kind of began in medieval mystery plays. And the dates I saw were, like, in the 1500s.
Crazy.
And there's plays from back then where there's those characters that are very, like, and it's repeated and it comes up often. And it's interesting that it's so old as a thing. And we all know it, like, we've all seen it in films and stuff.
Oh, very interesting. Thank you.
Yeah.
Cool. I was also wondering, why can she talk but they can't?
Mm-hmm. Different spells, I guess.
Weird. And it's also interesting to see that her spell doesn't stay very long.
Yeah.
You know, she has to drink the potion in minutes.
Yeah, she keeps having to, like, top it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we also see magic again from Callum. But we see a rune, but we don't know which one.
Because
I don't
can't speak under the water. Then she's pissed. Because she realizes that Ezrin knows where it is and starts throwing things at them, and then ends up grabbing Ezrin and, tell me everything, little king, or I'll squeeze it out of you, and starts getting very physical with them. And then she starts getting hit by arrows. And yay, Rayla managed to use her
super
gills.
Cool.
Well done, Rayla. And
super cool.
Stella's there too, with the amulet around her neck.
Mm-hmm.
Then Rayla gets grabbed. Callum's trying to free her. Claudia grabs all of them. I'll destroy all of you if I have to. And Ez ends up, like, glancing at the clamshell. And then she knows where it is. And while she's distracted, she doesn't see that Stella makes Rayla a portal to grab her butterfly blades. And then we get the... having her tentacle...
swish.
Leg cut.
Yeah.
Wow.
Intense. Yeah.
Very. And Callum's behind her and opens her potion.
Yeah.
Which disperses into the water and is gone.
And she fights for air and has to get up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oi, oi. Very, 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 very intense.
Yeah.
And even more intense when we realize that actually her leg is gone, but that's coming.
That's coming later.
Yeah. Then we get kind of the celebratory opening up the clam and getting the pearl out under the water, and it's all shiny and stuff.
But I missed something. I was wondering what Esrin said to the clam to open it.
Hmm.
Underwater.
Yeah.
Without speaking.
Yeah. But I was reading because I got this really nice book for my birthday. It's called Callum's Spellbook. And in it, there's like different pages about different characters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually a page in it written by Esrin explaining his skills.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's not like speaking. So he doesn't actually hear words from the animals and stuff. It's an empathetic thing. So he feels how they're feeling and has similar feelings, and they communicate through feelings then. So he maybe just put his hand on the clam, I wasn't paying attention, and then kind of shared his feeling of wanting it to open, and the clam responded, maybe.
Okay, interesting. But that reminds me of another episode we talked about, the termites or insects
gossiping. Yeah,
how does he know that they're gossiping?
I also thought similar things, but yeah, maybe once you get really into feelings and stuff, maybe you can also notice the kind of
that's my gossip feeling.
Gossip feeling. Exactly. I don't know. Yeah, so yeah, interesting extra information from that book.
Cool. Yeah, and yeah, we see the pearl inside. It's a very shiny, nice looking pearl. And then we also see the surrounding where the prison is actually located, or the clam. And it looks like the clam is lying inside a huge rib cage.
Yeah.
Maybe of a dragon.
Or a leviathan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We
something so big.
I saw the, what's it called? The back bones and the hip bone lying further away.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the front, in our front view, we see a rib cage.
Yeah.
So I would suggest dragon, because the dragon, the arch dragons, you know, put the prison together, and maybe they said, oh, here's a dragon funeral place. not funeral place, a cemetery.
Yeah.
Maybe we could put the prison there or something.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe when they put it there, there was also more of the creature left that was like hiding the clown, and now it's so long ago
that. Or was swallowed.
Swallowed by a big.
Something.
Which then died.
Yeah.
So maybe it was swimming around. It lived in the Sea of the Castout and it was a moving prison.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not?
But with a live clam inside? I don't know.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting.
We don't. Yes. These are just theories. So just some news from the Breach of Theories coming out here. Yeah, so, interesting stuff, exciting stuff. So, then we move on to the ruins of Luxoria, the camp, and the Queen Janai has returned, and she gets told by Corvus that she has been betrayed.
Dun-dun-dun.
Then it cuts to the betrayal, or the betrayer, in the cave. Karim and Pharos are sitting there. Karim's rubbing his finger where his ring used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mianna walks in. And Karim cries. And Mianna says, my loyalty has never wavered.
And love.
And her love. And what else does she give him?
the Sunseed, and an army.
Hooray!
So I was completely wrong about Miana, and I feel ashamed.
No. Yeah. It's okay, yeah, these things happen. Yeah, and I really could not remember, like, much of this chapter at all. No. So I wasn't sure anymore if she actually betrayed them or not. But there we go. Yes, she did. Then we move on to Zubair, and she's in the forest. We get a really nice image, actually, with the storm spire,
mm-hmm.
with the moon behind it, and then her, you just see her in the forest curled up. And it kind of is similar to how she was curled up in the cave when we first got to know her, when she was in this deep slumber, when she was grieving for Avazandam and for Zim, thinking that Zim was also dead. So yeah, really nice imagery.
Mm-hmm. And we hear someone singing.
And laughing, a really goofy laugh.
The mushroom mage who lives on Fungi Lane.
Yeah.
It's Muku, an Earthblood elf, and reminded me of Tom Bombadil in The Lord of the Rings.
Totally.
Yeah. And it's also a reference to The Muffin Man.
Yeah.
An old child song.
The Muffin Man, the Muffin Man.
Mm-hmm. It's me.
Yep.
Yeah, and he tries to heal Zubair with his mushroom magic. And we also see then a huge fungi symbol around Zubair and her surroundings. It's, yeah, very beautiful.
Yeah, it's really nice. And she's been, like, healed by the network of fungi.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cool.
Which is also an actual medicine thing. To heal someone with mushrooms.
Yeah.
Or spores or something.
Mm-hmm.
Which reminds me of The Last of Us.
The Last of Us. Oh, yeah. Whole different kind of spores. But not really healing.
Nope. Yeah.
Very good. Made me think of Avatar again with the spirit vines and the swamp and everything being connected a bit.
Totally.
But it's like, it makes sense with fungi. And we know from science that fungi can also be actually spread over many, many, many kilometers share nutrients with each other and stuff. So yeah, it's cool. It's based in science.
I think there's also the oldest living thing is also a mushroom. Totally cool.
Yeah. So that leaves us with a bit of positivity anyway. It looks like Zubair is going to be helped by this mage, wizard, creature.
Yeah.
Which we don't actually see until the credits, right? We don't see him.
Yes, we do.
I thought we just saw his hands.
No. We see him also dancing around.
Ah, yeah.
And then, you know, spreading the spores on Zubair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But maybe not close up, but a more bird perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like a bird's eye view of it. Yeah. And we don't get like an introduction like,
no.
Hello,
no.
I'm blah blah.
No.
Yeah, so hooray! Zubair's being looked after. She's That's not gonna really turn into a horrible zombie and kill everyone.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Unless he's now just like the first meal. But I hope they won't be that dark.
Yeah.
No. We go back to the ruins of Luxoria. Or do you have something else to say
about? Yeah, I had something when the Team Sim is complete again on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one question. So I understand why, but why are they taking the prison with them?
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah, it's a bit of a risky move, huh? Yeah. Like, I mean, Claudia's nearby. She's injured, but she knows where Catullus is.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
What are they going to do with it now? Yeah, and so we get kind of their elation with finding that and stuff. And that it's just all these short scenes now that are all cut into each other. We get the Janai and Amaya and Janai's nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
She finally gets in this nightmare vision what it was that Aravos said to her sister before she killed her, that he swallowed their great grandmother.
Yeah. Aditi.
Aditi, yeah.
Yeah. So Janai is actually taking Kessa's place.
Yeah.
And then here's what Aravos says.
Was it Janai in the vision? Mm-hmm. Ah, okay. I thought it was just her, that she was like seeing her sister.
No, it was her.
Yeah. So she finally heard that, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And then wakes up crying, gets comforted by Amaya.
Yeah. One thing.
Yeah.
In this scene, we also had, after this, getting scratched under the skin.
Like getting burnt up like a match.
Burnt up.
Yeah.
There was a red thingy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it looked like an autostereogram or a magic eye. Mm-hmm. So if you know these books where you see a random image stuff, and if you look long enough and your eye adjusts to the image, you see a 3D in it. And it looked like it, but yeah, I looked closely and I didn't see anything.
Yeah, and we both looked at it for a while, but it was moving as well, so I don't know if you can do those in a moving...
Yeah, you can, actually. There's a whole game around it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, well, listeners, if you want to try it, go and rewatch that scene, pause it and see if you can see anything, and let us know. Okay, it cuts to the anti-heroes then, and Terry finding Claudia on the beach and realizes as she collapses then that her leg is gone and she's crying a lot. Mm. She's just unconsolable because I guess she thinks Viren's dying now and she's defeated and that's it.
He also was, anxiously waiting for Claudia.
Yeah.
And then maybe considered his life choices upon seeing her missing leg.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still there for her. So that's a plus point.
Yeah.
Oh.
Good old Terry.
Oh.
We get the heroes cuddling on the boat, like you said.
Oh. Ah, sorry. Yeah.
That's fine. And then they're like holding up the pearl, and then cuts to the moon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was a nice scene change.
Mm-hmm.
And then Viren lying there and Aravos telling him, tomorrow the sun will rise and you will not.
Very nice. Because
you're not doing what I asked you to. I'm not your friend anymore.
Yes, Dad. Yeah, nice voice. He waits for his death.
What's gonna happen?
Oh.
Is he gonna die? Don't know.
Oh.
Let's do the credits, Jelly Tarts, and then we can go a bit more into the deeper themes. Any theories that we have? Yeah?
Also title,
yes.
Okay.
Credits. The Mushroom Man in a Mary Poppins pose.
I have the exact same thing, yes.
Yes.
Then, I wrote down Purple Pentapus with its child. Cute. But I wrote down, did we see this before?
Yeah.
And now you said Pentapox, it's from Avatar. So we have the Purple Pentapus from the Dragon Prince next to the Pentapox thingy from Avatar.
Which is also called the Purple Pentapus.
Okay,
Yeah, directly next to each other. It's nice. They do an Easter egg and then they really rub it in your face like, come on.
Yes.
You know this.
And I didn't get it.
Maybe if you watched it another
several times,
a couple of times, and it would yeah. Then we get Aravos, Viren, and Sparklepuff having a nice family portrait.
Mm-hmm. And it's also a little bit like, you know, these old medieval or royal family portraits.
No one's smiling.
No one's smiling. Actually, Aravos is smiling a little bit.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But Viren is disgruntled. And so Sparklepuff looks like a wild teenager or something. So it's really funny. And yeah, it's like Viren is the mother and, you know, the father Aravos is standing next to her and
yeah,
having the arm on his shoulder.
Yeah, it's totally.
Really funny.
It's very funny.
It's me.
Yeah.
Aravos is standing inside a clamshell like the birth of Venus.
Ah, I was going to say it's definitely a reference to something.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. It's this painting of Botticelli or something.
Okay.
Italian painter.
Hmm.
Really old.
I knew it must be something.
No.
They don't put these things in.
And it's hilarious. It's totally the pose, you know?
Yeah.
It's really nice.
I'm also wondering now if the family portrait is like referencing a very, very specific... It probably is referencing some very specific...
I had a look in at some Google images, but... Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Maybe. Don't know.
Maybe there's a reference, but I didn't catch.
We shall see. Maybe we'll find out later.
Yeah.
Then we get the symbol, which we're both looking at it like we've seen it. What is the symbol? We've definitely seen it in this chapter. And then we skip back through a little bit, and it's actually on the cover of Aravos's very ancient spell book, which contains his old spells, he said. That wasn't, it didn't have a name or anything. But yeah.
Yeah. And then we have a youngish looking Viren lying in the grass. I wrote down Schrödinger's Viren because we don't know if he's dead or alive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the last thing we see.
At peace.
Yeah.
Rest in peace, Viren.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not.
Alive or dead.
Yeah.
Have a nice rest.
Yeah.
Jellies?
None.
I just have, you and me, we have a different important mission. We're on dragon sitting duty. Bait Grumbles and bait sitting duty.
Yeah. That was a good one, yeah.
And then I have, but you already said it, he has my lovely eyes. I'm afraid his voice must be from your side of the family.
Very good. Okay.
So, let's talk about the title.
Yeah. So it's called Infantis Sanguine, and we had a chat with Jan, and he is an expert in Latin, and actually in the wiki it's translated wrong. It says in the wiki, which means blood of a child in Latin, but it's actually using blood or with a blood. It's a ablativus. Like, we have, and you know, this dative and genitive and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, ablative in Latin. And it would be sanguis.
Like, just the noun, like the thing would be blood.
No, the whole thing, the title. In the wiki, it says blood of a child. And if you translate this back into Latin, it would be infantis sanguis,
mm-hmm,
and not infantis sanguine.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's a difference.
So we're going to have to run our Latin translations by Jan from now on.
Maybe, yes.
And it makes sense, blood of child, also for the topics in the episode, like also Claudia's using her blood, you know, for the thing, and bleeds into the ocean from her severed leg.
Oh.
Stuff. Hardcore.
Sauron doesn't lose any blood.
No.
But Sir Sparklepuff said blood of a child or blood of child several chapters ago.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's coming together.
Yeah, it just, yeah, it makes sense as a title for this chapter. And overarching themes, I just have like big decisions. I mean, for Viren, like, what is he going to do? Like, either he's going to die in a few hours or he's not, you know? And what is he going to do with that? I have a couple of theories, or like one theory about that. And other overarching themes I just wrote in my notes. Oy, oy, oy.
Oh dear.
Yeah. We have good news and bad news, you know? Like, it's cool that they got the prison, they found it, but Claudia doesn't have it. Nice. Good news with Zubaya. But yeah, all the Viren stuff and the Claudia and Terry stuff, and it's all a bit scary, really.
Totally.
And you know, Claudia's, like, turned evil, but you also don't want her to, like, die.
No.
I don't know.
I'm yeah. So the next season is coming out soon. Then we will know more.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, it was. I saw an advertisement that there's a con, at the end of March. Mm-hmm. We're in March 2024 right now, and at the end of March they're going to show the first episode of season 6 at the con. Have a discussion panel. From the date of recording, that's in like 2 weeks. Nice. So hopefully the new season is coming really soon.
Yeah, nice.
Though we don't have a release date for it. No.
Okay, I have some thoughts about the next seasons.
Yeah.
So, Riven, I think he will kill Sir Sparkcroft. And then Claudia creates a leg for herself, or does something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was wondering, after Viren is alive again, what is their purpose?
Yeah.
Because they got everything they wanted. They don't need to free Eros.
Yeah. Unless it's a... Aravos only shows them once he's out of the prison thing.
But Aravos showed Viren how to kill, or how to resurrect himself again?
He didn't show him yet. He said he would.
Ah, and you mean, like, he had to say the spell?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
Like, Aravos is still holding the key, like, still holding the power, and... could.
But maybe, you know... okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But then, yeah, that is the question. Yeah, or Viren just lets the time tick away and then dies. And then also it's the same. Yeah, what do they do then? Would Claudia still go and try and find the prison and let Aravos out of rage because he didn't?
No.
Save Viren?
Or can you resurrect twice?
Wow, yeah. And we don't even know what she did the first time to resurrect Viren.
But it took her 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So
we might have in 2 years another version of Zombie Viren.
Zombie Viren, part 2.
Surprise! Yeah, I was wondering similar things, and I wondered if we would see Viren decide to kill Sparklepuff, but as a twist, wouldn't use it to keep himself alive, but would use it to heal Claudia, and then he would die.
Okay. Yeah.
Is my feeling that something like that might happen, because he's turned a corner. And whatever, and that might be his, like, last... Okay, he didn't want to do any dark magic, but that's his last dark magic.
Also interesting.
Thing.
Yes. So I also had this thought, if they don't have a purpose anymore, because they don't need Eros, maybe they combine their forces to with Team Sim to defeat him, actually.
Mm.
Because Wirin then decided, hey, I don't want to go this path further along.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get rid of him.
So is that attached to my theory that he dies by saving Claudia? And then they're like, oh, he died. And then he said to go after Aravos. Or is that a separate...
That's a separate thing. When they don't need Aravos to use the spell.
Ah, okay. And they just figure it out themselves.
Yeah, exactly. Because he knows, Wirin knows the spell, but not how to use it. That's the thing I didn't...
Yeah, he doesn't have all the information.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe they could figure it out, but they don't have very much time.
No.
But yeah, that's... Yeah. It could be something along those lines. Yeah. That's the only theory I have, basically, of what's going to happen now. But it is scary that they have the prison and there's not really a plan. Unless they work together with the Archdragons again to hide the prison again somehow. I guess they're going to try and get it back to Zabea.
Yeah,
they also don't know what's going on with Zabea, do they? They haven't heard from her. She just never showed up.
Yeah. I think they go first back to the Sunfire Elf camp and then help Lux Aria. So that's their next thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, Luxoria is also, you know, Karim attacks the Sunfire Elf camp and wants to dethrone Janai or even kill her. Or at least get his ring back.
Yeah.
And then do something evil with the Sunseed. Then Team Sim gets, a message of Maya, hey, help us. There's an army coming.
Yeah.
Something about that.
But then they should definitely not... They're probably going to split up again then, because they definitely... They shouldn't take the Pearl prison to a place where there's about to be, like, a war. So I just had a thought. I'm just going to look in this nice reference book I have. There's a map of the different places. Okay, I'm just looking at the map of where... Like, if you didn't want to be involved in all of that trouble, where would you take it? Probably to one of the human kingdoms, like, away from all of the crazy magic stuff that could happen. And the furthest away, from what I could see, if you go all the way, like, so the Sea of the Cast Out is quite far into Zadia on the east, and then all the way on the west, you have, like, Evernia, Delbar, and Neolandia.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's going to be like the Pearl's going to go off to one of the human kingdoms, and then we're finally going to get some help from the the useless human kingdoms.
From the cool queen.
Yeah, but, that's a bit closer. That's still on the border to Zadia.
Okay.
Yeah, just looking at the map. But yeah, actually, Durin and Queen Anya would be the best place.
Mm.
The best place to send it. Probably. Anyway, just some thoughts from us. We don't have anything concrete, and we're just very much looking forward to the new season.
I have one more.
Yes.
About Zubeya. So she gets healed, obviously, and then maybe has even more abilities thanks to the Mushroom Mage.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Like
mushroom magic.
No, not only creating lightning, but mushroom lighting.
Nice. So it'll be like sparky and puffy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. Cool. All right. Do you have any more thoughts? Was that final thought from you?
That was my final thought.
Okay, then I guess we'll leave it here. Thanks for listening, and we will start recording again soon. We may be bringing out some sort of surprise tangent episode while we wait.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on the feed anyway.
Yeah, and our website.
Our website, yes. Yeah. And Instagram, which is new.
Yeah.
And yeah. As always, you can contact us on a Telegram chat. Okay.
Thanks for listening.
Speak to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
His jailer, drag him down, drown, 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 down in the wicked depths below. Lost at sea, the sailor cried, I will not drown and I will not die. The ocean's rule I dare defy, the sea shall bow. Sailor, ships adrift, and the sea is his jailer. Drag him down, drown, 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 down in the wicked depths below. The fog pressed in, the ice did freeze, the sails called nary a whispered please. But to his pride, the sailor ceased. The sea shall bow to me, the sea shall bow to me. Its hull full tore, the sailor he could swim no more. But even as he drowned, he swore, the sea shall bow to me. The sea shall bow to me. Woe to the man, the dark-eyed sailor, ships adrift. And the sea's his jailer. Drag him down, drown, 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 down to the depths, drown in the depths, down to the wicked depths below.